Friday and a payday, by the way. Is it too late for me to apologize for anything I've already said, Andrew?
Nope, you can still apologize.
All right, I'd like to apologize for anything I'm about to say or have said in the last hour. Bucky's Auto Service Center, no apology needed there. They just give you great customer service. The other people will say they're sorry. Those other people that fix cars, they'll say, hey, you know what? We can't do it. We can't do it right. Why don't you go to Bucky's? That's how great Bucky's is. Their competition sends people over to them. You drive your car in.
That's great.
You drive your car in. They're like, you know what? Don't even bother. Don't even bother. 16 locations, been around since 1948. Take your car there. Go to Bucky's. You just give up the power of Bucky's. All right, here's what's going to happen. We're going to give up our show at some point when we're told that CBS is going to take over, and we're going to go to the White House Rose Garden on a cold day in January, and the president will be speaking. And as Tom pointed out during the commercial break, we have one ear on the sponsors because we love our sponsors. And then Tom said, hey, if he talks and the press is there and turns into a press conference, you can kiss this show goodbye.
It's not quite what I said, but it could take a long time.
Yes.
Remember last time he took questions about, you know, darn near anything. And if this is about the government shutdown and then border security, this could be a big event, or it could be nothing. So you need to stay tuned.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know when Tom and Curly might jump back in.
That's true, Tom. That many time. Plus, also, Shelly came in during the commercial break and said, hey, nobody takes away my time. As evident of all this week, when we had to keep going to him every 4 minutes.
And last week.
Hey, yeah, listen, I gave you guys a break in the 9 o'clock hour because it didn't warrant it today. Uh-huh. But yeah, I mean, come on. The president doesn't need... Hey, I'm the traffic guy, the cherry pie guy.
I know, you are. All right, so it says, cars just disappeared. What happened to the 90,000 cars a day the viaduct carried before it closed?
And that's what we're trying to find out. I mean, we're really trying to figure out where those cars went because they haven't gone in droves to other places like we had anticipated. They haven't gone to transit as much as we had anticipated. They haven't gone to, you know, different routes as much as we have anticipated. So, yeah, we're trying to figure out where they've all gone. Now, what we can say for certain is the people that do commute have started their commutes way earlier than normal.
Okay.
Normal by about an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And while we're waiting, and we might get a little bit more information, hopefully on this, at least hard data when Metro releases some of its numbers, because
right,
it's so soon to compile those numbers in almost real time. It's hard to do. So we have seen a slight increase in transit. We've certainly seen an increase in bike ridership.
Bikes.
In the first week, certainly. We'll see if it continued for this week, because what did we have last week? Sunny weather. What did we have this week? Rain.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that, you know, the crossings across, if the bike traffic was as busy this week as it was last.
How many bikes? To
well,
go from, what,
a significant
50 to
number.
60?
You know, no, gosh, no. In the matters of hundreds and whatnot.
A huge percentage jump.
Yeah,
I
exactly
care about percentages, Tom.
It doesn't make up for 90,000.
No, exactly.
Vehicles.
So we're still trying to figure out where did everybody take a 3 week vacation? I doubt it. Did some people take 1 week vacation? Certainly. We've heard from people who have done that. We've heard from plenty of people who have off shifted and or working for home. And I've asked the texters. We've had businesses text in throughout this and go, okay, we're doing this. And I'm like, is that sustainable? And they all say no. Like, for instance, is it possible for that person who's now telecommuting 3 days a week and maybe working on Friday, Monday, depending on what they have,
mm-hmm,
is that sustainable for 3 weeks? Yes, but is it sustainable after for long term? They are all saying no.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. Now, what the experiment we have from the public employees, who we all know are working, certain groups are working different shifts, different hours, is that sustainable? Possibly.
Uh-huh.
Is it? I mean, now again, we've talked about off-shifting.
Then we don't even need the tunnel.
Public employees.
We don't need the tunnel.
Well, mm-hmm, you know, no, we do, because the bottom line to all of this, and let me explain whether we need the tunnel or not. Let me explain what I am anticipating and what we really need to wait for.
Uh-huh.
And that is when the tunnel opens, everyone goes back to their normal routines. So the people who are going at 5:30 now go back to going at 6:30. What are we going to see in terms of a sea change in our commute with everybody going back? Are they going to use the tunnel that has no downtown exits and will eventually have a toll? We don't know yet.
Uh-huh.
And so whatever people are doing, I'm glad they're doing it, because if they haven't been, our drives would be much worse than they are. But if you can keep it going, say you found a transit option and it works for you, stick with it, my man. Keep doing it.
Right.
'Cause that, I mean, it's obvious that our travel times have been better than pre-viaduct throughout, you know, like if it's an hour from Federal Way 2 weeks ago, today it's 50 minutes, which is 10 minutes faster. But the drive from Albro into downtown has been about 10 minutes slower. But the overall corridor has been faster because people aren't there. So we're still trying to figure out where they are.
So it's a combination of a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and we don't know what it is yet.
Working from home, taking the bus, riding a car, going into work later.
Exactly. Okay. It's a variety of things. And when we get that tunnel and, you know, we see how that works, we're going to have to, we're going to see how things go.
Is there any way that because of this 3 weeks practice of getting by without the viaduct and without the tunnel that it could hurt tunnel traffic? Or is the assumption once the tunnel's there, toll or no, it'll be packed?
Well, we're still expecting the people to use that corridor to for whom it makes sense. And we're going to have to find out, how's it going to work at the ends for all those people who now have to turn around and make a U-turn to get into downtown? What that's going to do, we've expected diversion because of the toll throughout all of this discussion over the last 5 years of this to be around 20%, maybe. So 20% of 90,000 cars are going to go somewhere else once the tolls start. So we'll just have to see how it goes. But no, I mean, I'm looking forward to using the tunnel. I can't wait, actually, to drive in there that first thing on the 4th, see how it goes. Hey, but we'll see.
Quick question for you. A study also, Seattle Times points out that they spent $4.4 million or something like that to advertise the tunnel.
Yes. And it's not a, hey, use the tunnel, use the... It's an ad campaign directed at a major change in our infrastructure. That's how they're defining it and defending it, is that, hey, we now have a tunnel that has no downtown exits. Look at it. Understand it. It's more of an education campaign. Did they need to spend $4.4 billion on it? Probably not. But it's a big enough change in a major corridor that they felt the necessity. It's an education campaign because there's still people that don't realize there are no downtown exits or things like that. So whether it needed to be spent in the grand scheme of things, I don't know, but education is certainly important.
And part of that education is that it's free initially, and then it won't be.
That's how they get you. The first one's free, Tom, and then after that, the tolls will start probably May, June timeframe-ish to give everybody a chance to figure it out. And I'm expecting our first responders to get a good indication of how they're going to respond to, because I'm expecting several accidents in that thing as people get used to it, because there is a significant downgrade having been in the tunnel, walking in what... When in a car going 40 and you go down into the bowels of that tunnel, it's weird on the eyes, at least walking in there. So just be prepared.
Okay.
So, John, you just wanted some hard numbers, so I got them. A 1,400, this is on two bike routes, 1,400 additional bike trips a day, and water taxi, 1,600 more riders a day.
1,400.
1,400 and 1,600.
Yeah, that certainly doesn't make up for 90,000 cars, but still, that's a significant, and that was what, at Fremont, going across at Fremont?
Yeah,
Fremont. Is it 1,400 increase or
additional?
In addition, because they have a counter on there, and so people hit it, and so that's an additional 1,400 a day, which is a good increase.
Yeah.
Did they do it in the rain this week?
No,
we'll find out.
Yeah. All right, thank you, Sally. Still waiting for the president. I think at 20 we're going to do it. CBS reported 10:20 time.
Now it says at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time, so that'll be 10:30 our time when the president's going to make his announcement.
Okay, but you see my computer right here. It says special report at 10:20.
Yeah, we'll be doing the special report.
Well, I understand. I'm just following the computer. You can look up there at fake news all you want.
Yeah.
This is it.
It's CNN.
But CNN fake news. Yeah. They're the king of fake news. Let's see. A collapse of two plans. You want to talk about the shutdown? This is irrelevant because now we're going to hear that the president is moving forward.
Well, all this sets it up. Yesterday, there were two significant votes. Both of them were turned down in the Senate that would have alleviated the shutdown. Neither of them passed. I mentioned this earlier. I think the significance of why right now we may be close to a deal is because there seemed to be some cracking of the Republican solidarity in favor of Trump, because six senators crossed the aisle and voted with the Democrats to open it up without a deal. I think at that point, that both Mitch McConnell, the head of the Senate Republicans, and Schumer, the head of the Senate Democrats, said, okay, listen, I think now there's reason for us to, we want to put this to bed. Mm-hmm. And so now they're working on it, and it sounds like Trump's going to make that announcement.
Okay, you want to hear from Wilbur Ross, Secretary of Commerce, coming under fire that he didn't understand why people are waiting in bread lines?
This is
the same guy that was talking about the cost of a can. Remember that? The aluminum tax?
Oh, yeah.
And people are like, how can that guy be a billionaire and be so dumb? And this is an example of, talk about being in a bubble. Is he trying to recover? I guess he's trying to recover from the thing that he said the other day when someone said, we don't understand. Federal workers are waiting in line and soup lines and getting going to get some handouts or food. That's not it. That's, yeah, it's him singing Cherry.
He's taking out the guitar.
That's how insensitive he is. He's singing Cherry Pie. Here's Wilbur Ross without the accompaniment.
You're talking about 800,000 workers, and while I feel sorry for the individuals that have hardship cases, 800,000 workers, if they never got their pay, which is not the case, they will eventually get it. But if they never got it, you're talking about a third of a percent on our GDP. So it's not like it's a gigantic number overall.
Mr. Secretary, there are reports that there are some federal workers who are going to homeless shelters.
The first part of it is he was responding to a question when they're talking about when the report comes out on the GDP on the quarter.
Yeah.
There are some economists that saying it could be flat.
A drag on the economy.
It could be yeah. flat. It might be down a little bit, but we won't see the historic highs of 3.8 or 4%.
To get food.
Well, I know they are, and I don't really quite understand why, because as I mentioned before, the obligations that they would undertake, say a borrowing from a bank or a credit union, are in effect federally guaranteed.
You could go to a bank or a credit union. I think 9% might be one of the rates. Go over there, get some money. Don't go and wait in line. Yeah. Go in a... If you're hungry, first place I like to go is to the BECU credit union. Right. Then Trump tries to jump in and say...
Well, I haven't heard the statement, but I do understand that perhaps he should have said it differently. Local people know who they are when they go for groceries and everything else. And I think what Wilbur is probably trying to say is that they will work along. I know banks are working along. If you have mortgages, the mortgagees, the folks... collecting the interest and all of those things, they work along. And that's what happens in time like this. They know the people. They've been dealing with them for years, and they work along. The grocery store.
Yeah, they're getting credits and stuff like that. All right. So we'll find out again.
I just need a different take. Take a different tack. Yeah, we understand.
We're sympathetic. We're doing what we can. And we're sorry.
We need to be pushing.
You're
going to
get paid. You're going to get paid. Right. Let's see. Want to say goodbye? We only have 1 minute. Man, I hate when news interrupts the show. It really messes up the whole flow of the rest of the nonsense we're trying to do. How about the fact that you could say goodbye to the halftime show at the Super Bowl being a great invitation and part of a cultural institution because football now has got politics injected into its veins and the metastasizing of that cancer of politics in the sport now extends out to an individual that stands at the 50-yard line and sings something from Maroon 5.
Yeah, well, so was that a tease or are we trying to jump into
that? No, we're going to go. We're going to do a special report.
Okay, yeah.
In 25 seconds.
Because I do think this is really interesting. Super Bowl halftime used to be like, you know, the brass ring for an entertainer. Oh,
right.
My God, look at you are now the center of society, and now it's like the scourge. It's becoming like the Oscar host. It's like nobody wants it because there are so many negative consequences to your career.
All right, we're also told, I guess he's the president speaks at 10:30?
That's the idea, yeah.
Or thereabout. Okay.
Plan, yeah.
So Fox has got the pictures up. We'll break away when we hear from the president. So it'll be a temporary reopening to allow them to then begin negotiating.
Yeah, it sounds like they've got no deal in place except to reopen it, and then they'll continue to hassle.
Okay, back to the conversation, which is the Super Bowl halftime shows. I looked up, because when Carol Channing passed away 2 weeks ago, I said to you, Tom, did you know that 1970 Carol Channing sang at the halftime show for the Super Bowl? Broadway star Carol Channing brought glitz to the gridiron, the first solo halftime performer. Here's a little bit of the now deceased Carol Channing singing at the halftime show. I got 11 more minutes. Who give me $5 not to play it? $5 not to
that's
play just, it.
That's,
I got five
bucks. Sound like
five bucks.
Carol Channing.
There's a guy playing a trumpet right in her face. Is that her? That doesn't even look like Carol Channing.
No, it's not.
That's got to be Carol Channing.
No.
Hang on. Who's producing this? No, that's her, Tom.
She has blonde hair.
Not 1970.
She was Hello Dolly then.
Who cares?
We are
it's somebody on
some
the halftime
random
show.
Random Super Bowl
no,
halftime show.
No, that's 1970s Carol Channing Super Bowl.
I know, but not Super Bowl, Harold Channing.
Super Bowl 5. 9.
You got the wrong. Oh my God.
I don't. Broadway show, Carol Channing. Here's the thing. Who's the guy that got asked to do the Super Bowl this year?
Well, I mean, Maroon 5 is the main group that's doing it now.
Right.
And one of the problems is they got turned down by lots of people beforehand because the NFL is not exactly an institution that a lot of performers want to embrace. And the fact that it's – so here's the crisis, if there is a crisis. There are a lot of people that are mad, a lot of performers that are mad about Colin Kaepernick's treatment by the NFL. So it is a social media issue that a lot of these performers are refusing to agree to a halftime show. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how much we've flipped. It used to be that performers were lusting after the halftime show gig. Now they're turning it down in scorn because they do not want to be affiliated with what they see as a negative, a blight on our society.
Well, what they're afraid of is they're going to get toasted on social media.
Yes,
there'll be a Twitter upstorm because they go on and do the halftime. But the majority of people that watch the Super Bowl don't care about the politics of the thing. When they're asked, "Do you want to see a political ad?" they say, "No, yeah. We don't want to see politics. Just give us the show." And most people don't really care about the halftime show, but they want to keep you around. Most people get up and go to the bathroom. After at that point, I mean, what, you know, let's go back to 1970 when Carol Channing did this.
Hey, we can get Carol Channing crazy to come out.
Watch this, she's gonna bring the house down. Can you imagine sitting home watching that? And be like, what? Really? This is the Super Bowl?
The original Super Bowl halftime was just marching bands. I mean, it was no big deal, and it became something. And now I think it's returning to its 1970s status as being so. Maroon 5 has been there's been a change.org petition to try to stop it.
Yeah.
A rapper Travis Scott is getting all sorts of hellacious comments. Mm-hmm. He has made the NFL agree to pay like $500,000 to some kind of charity fund.
Yeah.
But they say it's really a shame because Atlanta is the nexus of hip-hop. They've got more hip-hop stars there. And to have a white pop band like Maroon 5 is even more embarrassing to the institution. So, I love Carol Channing. I just wish we could hear her.
The guy's playing a horn right in the mic. Right. Don't forget, it's Friday. That means Muckleshoot Bingo is going to be bringing you the know-it-all quiz. You get one person to get on the phone to get on the air. I found out last week, Tom, Kim was our winner, and it was Kim Eggy, my friend. And she identified herself to Jacob, but then Jacob didn't tell me. I had no idea. I was talking to my buddy on the air.
As long as she's not a Cairo employee, I think we're okay. Not.
Well, she listens so often, she should probably get paid. By the way, I'm supposed to say hello to somebody. Who am I supposed to say hello to?
Connie? Was it Connie?
Connie, what's Connie's last name? I sent that
Nap?
To you. Yeah, Connie Knapp, also a person that over-listens. Over-listening is a new term I just came up with, where you listen too much.
There's no such thing.
Oh, yes, there is.
No.
Yeah, I've run into people that are like, my husband loves you guys, and when he misses it, he plays the podcast in the kitchen and makes me listen to stuff and then rewinds it to make me listen again if I didn't get the joke. That's someone who's over-listening, and it's causing some problems in relationships.
We're the solution to their problems, not the cause of them.
That's right. It gives the husband something to talk to the wife
yeah,
about.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable versa. Silence. All right, here we go. Muckleshoot Bingo bring you the know-it-all quiz. This week's winner gets a chance to win 4 tickets to the Seattle Boat Show. It starts today and runs through February 2nd at the CenturyLink Field and South Lake Union. Find your tickets at seattleboatshow.com. That's the Muckleshoot Bingo Know-It-All Quiz coming up at 11:35. We'll give you the phone number to get on the air at 11 o'clock. Right now, we're still waiting. The president's supposed to step down those 3 or 4 steps at the back of the White House, head on to the Rose Garden, a beautiful sunny day in Washington, D.C., and I'm just stalling. Should we just stay on this or just go into a regular thing and wait to be broken into?
I think we should be wait to be broken into.
All right, here we go.
So carry on with the show.
All right, good. Thank you, Tom. Way to make an executive decision. Jacob's too busy wondering what he could do to robots. All right, here we go. I looked at it like, watching our weight, that's a problem. That's old. Catholic Church has no idea how to win over old young people. This is like the second or third time this thing has come around. I remember reading that they were going to have an app on the phone and you could pray and you could do all sorts of stuff. Let's get in touch with the kids because they're all online. someone comes up with that idea. They think that's going to somehow attract children or at least young people anywhere between the ages of 18 and 39 back to the church.
That's right. And it's a very kind of a, I mean, it's from Vice, so it's a very saucy article about this.
Well, it's left-leaning people that are religious or
well,
dumb,
it's kind
dumb
of, it's sort of mocking the church. But I do think that a lot of people within the church think it is evidently mockable when it comes to things like technology and apps. But there's this a prayer app that's been kicking around for a couple of years, and the Pope is giving it new prominence all of a sudden, so that's why this article is there. It's called A Click to Pray. It's free, John, and you can, like many apps, you can post prayers yourself, you can respond to strangers' prayers and comment on them, or scroll through the prayers that others have posted online without having to engage at all. So you just basically have access to people praying, and you could continue to do that. There are three main sections: pray with the Pope, pray every day, and pray with the network. And so what you do is you have all these kind of options. Mm-hmm. And the question is this a way to re-engage the young people who have fallen away from the church?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, if you, let's say you have a 21-year-old who may, there may be a Catholic tradition in their family, they may have been raised Catholic, for their entire life, just about, you've been hearing stories about sexual abuse by the clergy.
Right.
For like it's a 20-year-old story, and so for a lot of people, they that have grown up in the church in this way, they see it as a source of alienation, not of anything welcoming, and so they say, is there a way to kind of turn this around to make this positive? And the dilemma that they say the technologists at Catholic Church are facing is that they're different clientels. The great thing about the Catholic Church is it's worldwide, but the difficult thing about the Catholic Church is it's all over the map in terms of who it's appealing to. In the United States, for instance, they say it appeals to really conservatives, you know, conservative Catholics who want to go back to the old ways with Latin masses and all that. And it also then would appeal, or they want to appeal to the hipper segment of Catholicism, which is, you know, part of the, in my generation, John, we have all the folk masses and all. Mm-hmm. And you've got that dilemma because they sort of see themselves as alienated. They also think that the Catholic Church in the United States is much more evangelically oriented than the European Church, which is much more traditional. And how do you appeal to all of these? And basically the Vice says, oh, give it up, Catholic Church. There's no way technology is not going to solve your problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus, if you're constantly told by mainstream media that being religious is being racist or being religious, you're dumb. They've won. The culture war has won in slowly destroying the part of how religion can be respected in the United States. So I looked up. This is a gap in age. So this is age gaps in introducing religions are the smallest in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia. So what they say is religion important to you?
Yeah.
18 to 39. You ready? North America, we're going to go United States and Canada, 43%.
Say it's important.
Yes.
And yet, wow, because the evangelical movement is really strong in this country.
22% in Canada.
Okay, 22% in Canada. So half, twice as many Americans see it as important as Canadians.
Okay, in Europe, 19%.
Okay.
So the big ones, you've got Latin America, 63%, Mid East and North Africa, 71%, Asian Pacific, 51%, and in Sub-Saharan Africa, you're going to get 88%.
Well, in fact, I know the growth of the Catholic Church, it's diminished in Europe and the United States, and it is prospering in Central America and South America, the Hispanic countries. I mean, we now have a pope from Argentina. That's not a surprise because that is where the groundswell of new Catholics are coming from.
Right.
And it may just be typical of the kinds of developments or movements of various cultures.
I think it's hard to be religious in the United States without people making fun of you. Here, the New York Times reporter is tweeted out today. He says he is doing an expose. Are you 20? Are you in your 20s or younger and went to a Christian school? I'd love to hear about your experiences and the impact on your life. So you think that New York Times writer is going to do a positive piece on Christian schools? Because right now we've heard that the Covington kids in Kentucky were all racist. So Catholic school,
white kids
are
racist. Yeah, but we've also heard the opposite now. So I think from the media backlash to the Covington story, which is a relatively small story, has now so swamped it that now everyone's being very careful. Oh, my God, yeah, we jumped to conclusions and they're terrible. There's more, breastfeeding about that than
not. But do you think,
a
bigger question,
yeah.
Not to that, do you think it's easy to be religious in the United States? Or do you feel if you mention that you're religious, or you believe in Jesus Christ, don't you think people are uncomfortable?
I think more George Bush was president because he got the evangelicals to back him. The evangelicals put Donald Trump in power as well.
No.
I think the key is they have formed a potent, the evangelicals. Now, that's different than all believers.
Right. But
the evangelical movement has figured out a way to really politicize their religious beliefs in a successful way. And I remember Ron Reagan used to say that he could never run for president. Why? Because he's an atheist, and we would never elect an atheist. And when they did this, who would you be less apt to vote for president? They did every single religion, and the atheist was the one who was the least.
Right, because the atheist is often, whether true or not, seen as angry or negative towards religion. The atheist is the person going on there and telling you that you're an idiot for believing that the spaghetti god with the strainer on his head, and you are a fool and you are an idiot if you think there's some higher power, that this is it, this is life. You go in the ground and you die, and worms eat you.
And yet, you would maintain that it's harder to be religious than an atheist in this country because we're so secularly oriented.
But I think the difference between being agnostic and being an atheist. An agnostic is like, you know what, I'm on the fence.
Yeah.
Could be, might not be.
Okay.
I've had discussions with agnostics. It's okay. They're like, yeah, if you want to believe that, that's fine. To me, I'm just not convinced. But
the atheist
is the one that looks at you and is demeaning to the individual. That's all.
That's a distinction that atheists don't acknowledge, is agnosticism and an atheist approach. However, be that as it may, the key here is that, is it hurt or help to be religious? Nobody running for president is willing to say, I'm not religious. In fact, George H.W. Bush said Jesus was the most influential person in his life, and that accrued a lot of votes for him.
And what year was that?
Well,
2000?
Yeah, 2000. It was not that long ago. Right.
19 years ago. A lot has changed, Tom. You see more people moving.
You really think? No way.
The evangelical movement
is even more strong. Trump preaches about how much he loves the Bible.
See Andrew in there giving us the wind-up sign?
That's right.
See that? The next sign he's going to give us.
There's
we can't
a reason
talk about it on
behind,
the air. Right back.
Because he's behind the glass.
All right. You write to us, you don't like Trading Academy. Text line at 98973, 98973. Great way to get in touch with us. So we still wait. We were told 10:30 our time that they would address the gaggle of reporters
that's
that are
right.
waiting.
The spotlight is still in the Rose Garden.
There it is.
Everyone is assembled, so they're just waiting for the president. Any moment now, we'll cut away to him.
Just saw a Fox News poll. You ready? 51% of respondents blame the president. Got it?
Okay.
34% blame Democrats.
Okay, good. So that's a 17 points favor of Democrats.
9% say everyone is to blame.
Okay.
3% blame Republicans.
Okay, so you add the Republicans and Trump.
The margin of error on the
54.
Poll is 3%. So that's
knock out
the fact that people are blaming the Republicans.
Yeah,
so it's 51 on top of the president.
I mean, I think this is why they're cracking right now. I mean, they realize that this is starting to work against. I mean, people take polls and they want to see, will this break against the Democrats or against the president? It's breaking against the Democrats. So, I mean, against the Trump administration, not the Republicans. And because of that, Trump said, okay, listen, I'll let go. Because remember, this shutdown is going away if the announcements are to be believed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a temporary, going away. And they still have to resolve the issue of the $5.7 million for border security, as the president says.
Maybe what they end up doing is, so you have a second layer, which is this, that you start to negotiate the border security. And on the behind the scenes, the other stuff that's going on is we're going to shut it down in 30 days, but we're going to put systems in place so we don't have as much problem. TSA agents
sneaky.
Or funding, loans, temporary stuff like that. So it allows you to bring back the giant hammer, which is bang, we shut down the government. The only reason they're sitting down to discuss border security is because they shut down the government. If they'd kept the thing open, it would not be the main topic of conversation.
Oh, I disagree wholeheartedly. In fact, we'll have to see. I think once this government shutdown has backfired on the president enough that I don't think they're going to go back to another shutdown.
Really?
I think this is.
How's it backfired on him? His polls are still the same.
His polls? No, he has the lowest polls. They said even among his base, which has been rock solid, he has the lowest percentage, like something like 33 or 34% approval. And they say it's
which is amazing
two to one
that the guy even has. He's has even
any
in the 30s.
Yeah.
Seriously, I voted for the guy, but just to go to show you just so the stuff that he does.
I heard Dory yesterday, though, say that he thinks that Trump's a better president than Obama, so.
As far as what? Just anything?
In general.
Yeah.
So.
He's a leader. Where he's leading us, I don't know.
Yeah, right. To the straits of hell.
That's right.
All right, come right back. Tom and Curly right here on Cairo Radio.